It's Marketplace Tech for January 27th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. Best tweet I saw on the internets yesterday came from a guy named Matthew Ingram, who wrote, "Apple just reported the largest quarterly profit of any company in history, so naturally, it is doomed." Not a bad way of summing up the complicated feelings among investors and others who watched as the company reported the slowest growth of its money-making device since the iPhone was released back in 2007. Expectations were for $76.6 billion in revenue. The company reported $75.9 billion. Bloomberg Intelligence senior analyst John Butler joins me on this topic. John, at the end of the day, we're talking about the slowing of iPhone sales growth for the company broadly, and that has people worried.
I think we are. As the numbers get bigger, it gets tougher and tougher to post high growth against those tough comparisons. It's a premium phone. It's a high-priced phone. And we're now seeing smartphone growth in emerging markets where lower-priced devices are favored.
John, we've heard some criticism saying that as a company, Apple is focused too much on its sort of hardware cash cows, right? And isn't getting far enough into other zones, car technology, artificial intelligence, the cloud, whatever. Does this earnings report help us understand whether or not that criticism is valid?
A lot of the markets you mentioned, Ben, are pretty far away from commercial maturity. And I think Apple's best opportunity is in its services business.
What, like content?
Content's a great example. You know, they've always been deeply involved in music. They need to do what Spotify is doing, which is move slowly, but, you know, in a very determined way towards video content, which is where the world is headed.
Now, again, worth noting that the company is obviously doing very well still when it comes to revenue. But from the earnings call, did you hear or see any more evidence of the company's vulnerabilities going forward?
I heard a little bit of defensiveness around probing at, are we at peak growth for the iPhone? It's over 65% of their revenue at this point.
John Butler, he is senior intelligence analyst for mobile devices at Bloomberg. John, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ben.
From a public tech behemoth to one that's still private, Uber. And let me tell you this, this is one of those stories that totally sounds like science fiction, but is in fact real life. The ride-hailing company says it is running a pilot program to use gyrometers in drivers' phones. We'll get to the what for in a second, but first, what the heck is a gyrometer? Kyle Weens is founder of iFixit.org, a free repair manual website.
So there are a lot of little sensors inside of your phone, everything from a GPS to an accelerometer to a gyroscope or a gyrometer. From a technical perspective, a gyrometer detects the increase in angular momentum, which is a complicated way of saying it's just detecting how much it's moving around.
Like when you brake too quickly, for instance. Uber says it is using this information to check rider complaints about drivers against driver behavior. The company's blog post said, quote, "increasingly technology can help get to the truth," unquote, and maybe in this case, reconciliation as well. You've heard of Kim Kardashian's Hollywood mobile game, right? Which raked in tens of millions of dollars per quarter after launch a few years back. Well, this app surely has the same goals in mind.
Churchill Solitaire will keep you coming back, battle after battle, deal after deal, until victory is won.
That was sound from Donald Rumsfeld's new mobile app, Churchill Solitaire, which launched this week. Yes, that Donald Rumsfeld, the former defense secretary. Evidence, perhaps, that the mobile game space is getting crowded and also undergoing interesting changes. Ian Bogost is a professor of interactive computing and media studies at the Georgia Institute of Technology. He's also the author of the book How to Talk About Video Games. Hi, Ian. Thanks for talking with us.
Thanks for having me.
Do you think the subscription model is potentially good for the mobile gaming world? It seems like we've seen a rise in that recently.
Anything that produces regular revenue from a business perspective is good for mobile games because they can count on it. One of the big problems with games has always been that they're this hit-driven business. You have no idea if they're going to do well. And then when one does well, it kind of lights up and then disappears. Subscriptions, you know, they even that out. I think the problem is that we're being asked to subscribe to everything. Are these games going to be able to hold out as yet another purchase every month?
Yeah, I was looking at some interesting data that was suggesting that people stick with games, mobile games specifically, and apps generally, for shorter periods than ever. That could, I guess, either be an opportunity for new creators or a really bad sign.
They're like trends. They're like memes, almost, especially on mobile phones when you can download them for free and it's very, very easy to do.
Right.
And, you know, you play it for a little bit. It's not that you even don't like it, right? You enjoy it, but there's so much choice that you might as well get the next thing.
Is the confounding nature of a game also perhaps a key characteristic?
I was playing this, you know, this Rumsfeld game, the Churchill solitaire game, and it's very, very, very difficult. It's almost unwinnable. And it was interesting to reflect on that idea with solitaire and with war and with the very particular kind of wars that we associate with Donald Rumsfeld. And that experience, you would think, would be undesirable. But actually, it's pretty engaging. That's a kind of experience that's quite a bit different from a traditional game that you're supposed to finish, or even one of these mobile games where you just play it and it doesn't really do anything. It just kind of runs endlessly and you get as far as you can.
Ian Bogost, Professor of Interactive Computing and Media at the Georgia Institute of Technology. Ian, thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
And if you like music and data, you got to check out Polygraph Hip Hop. It graphs Billboard's top 10 hip hop tracks from the years 1989 through 2015 and plays them live in a timeline. Check out the whole thing, or if you're me, just play the best stuff, you know, 1991 through 1999, over and over and over. Check it out at facebook.com/marketplacetech. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.